Hey, it's Cassie.
Hey, it's Shelby, and we're from Chatham.
You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM.
Acre, Catskill, and Hudson.
Listener-supported hands-on radio.
For Greene and Columbia counties. Have a nice day.
Yay!
Are you between the ages of 10 and 18 and want to help with a youth radio show made by and about Greene County youth for WGXC 90.7 FM? Then sign up for the WGXC Youth Radio Production Training, Mondays at 6 p.m. from November the 7th until December the 26th at the Catskill Community Center on 344 Main Street in Catskill. Learn how to use audio recorders and editing software. Produce a half-hour weekly radio show to air Thursdays at 3:30 to 4 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM. Open to all Greene County youth age 10 to 18. For more information or to sign up, contact Laura Anderson at lalarky@gmail.com. That's lalarky@gmail.com. This program is made possible in part by a grant from the Greene County Youth Bureau.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Homespun Occasions, Old Time Square and Contra Dancing with caller and live fiddle music for special events, community celebrations, and school programs. www.homespun.biz or 1-800-908-HOME.
Welcome to the family show, What is Music? I'm your host from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m., Sherry Bauer Mayorga, and let's light up the morning with a tune by the singing family from England, the Watersons. Here they are singing something we know much about, country life.
I like to rise when the sun, she rises early in the morning. I like to hear them small birds singing merrily upon their laylum, and hurrah for the life of a country boy, and to ramble in the new mown hay.
In spring we sow at the harvest mow, and that is how the seasons round they go. But of all the times, if choose I may, 'twon't be rambling through the new mown hay. For
I like to rise when the sun, she rises early in the morning, and I like to hear them small birds singing merrily upon their laylum, and hurrah for the life of a country boy, and to ramble in the new mown hay.
In winter when the sky is grey, we engine with it our time's away, but in the summer when the sun shines gay, we go rambling through the new mown hay. For
I like to rise when the sun, she rises early in the morning. I like to hear them small birds singing merrily upon their laylum, and hurrah for the life of a country boy, and to ramble in the new mown hay.
Good morning and welcome to What is Music? Today we'll continue our foraging for sounds by continuing our tour through the Western Orchestra and focusing in on the instruments of the orchestra. Our last few shows spotlighted the violin, so today we move on to the other extreme of the pitch spectrum, and that's the tuba. Hello, tuba. No doubt I say tuba, and a picture and sound comes to mind. In this part of the world, we most often encounter this wondrous instrument in marching bands, and probably hear in our mind's ear the low and large bubble sounds they create to support the entire band with both harmony and beat. So now, the history of the tuba is quite a romp through various ideas about shape, sound, and ways of changing pitch. There are lots of ways to design 18 feet of tubing. That's how long the tuba would be if you unraveled it. It would unravel into a long, flaring cone little tube that would start with a small diameter and then spread out into a morning glory shape. That gives it its name, the conical bore instrument. All instruments that end with this bottom bell-bottom flare, such as the clarinet and trumpet, are called conical bore instruments. This is something I learned in my interview with Mark Giordano. So anyway, back to the tuba. It was the last acoustic instrument to be introduced into the Western orchestra in the mid-19th century. So which came first, the sound or the instrument? And it seems in the case of the tuba, the imagined sound came first. Composers Hector Berlioz, Richard Wagner, and marching band extraordinaire John Philip Sousa had need of a supportive instrument in their orchestrations, an instrument which would support the wind and brass sections, the trumpets, the trombones, French horns, clarinet, oboe, flute, anything using wind to create sound. They were in need of an instrument with a low, round, and warm sound, something that something quite different from the sound of the string bass. 19th century composers knew of early tuba-like instruments, such as the serpent, the ophicleide, and the bass horn. But they encouraged instrument builders to create instruments closer to the sounds they imagined, instruments which were easier to perhaps transport, to build, and mostly instruments which were flexible and versatile enough to meet the demands of creative and virtuosic instrumentalists. Working with instrument builders, composers were able to develop the instrument which matched the sounds they imagined, and marching band composer, as I said, John Philip Sousa, worked with J.W. Pepper, and C.G. Kahn, and he developed the sousaphone. Richard Wagner encouraged the saxophone builder Adolf Sax to develop the B-flat or tenor tuba and the F or bass tuba. And he was the first to incorporate a quartet of these instruments into his opera Das Rheingold. These instruments became known as Wagner tubas. See, you invent a tuba and you get one named after you. So we have the sousaphone and the Wagner tuba. Hector Berlioz, who once had scored for the precursor to the tuba, the ophicleide, updated his orchestrations to keep up with the developments and generations of tubas. So the tuba, being the baby of the orchestra, since it was the last to enter the orchestra, is much like the youngest child in a family, with five brothers and sisters, maybe more. How does it get itself heard? Will anyone ever allow the tuba to have a solo and say that which only it can say? In an orchestra, marching band, or jazz band, you would miss the bass notes of a tuba if they were gone, but it rarely gets a solo. Thus, the tuba is known as the underdog of instruments. It's there, necessary, but overlooked. The tubist's wish to have a solo was put into a song and story called Tubby the Tuba. It was originally a puppet tune cartoon made in 1947, but now the piece has become an orchestral standard for children and adults like myself. Here is that 1947 soundtrack from the cartoon with Victor Jory as the narrator. This is Tubby the Tuba, and it has a happy ending.
Once upon a time, there was an orchestra which was all busy tuning up. First, the oboe gave his A to the strings, to the woodwinds, to the brass. Up and around the scales they raced, helter-skelter, faster and faster. Tubby the Tuba, a fat little tuba, puffing away, but oh so slow. Oh, what love. lovely music, thought Tubby, and sighed. Here, what's the matter, said Peepo the Piccolo. Oh, said Tubby, every time we do a new piece, you all get such pretty melodies to play. And I never, never a pretty melody. But people never write pretty melodies for tubas. It just isn't done. Oh, there's the conductor. First, the violins danced the lovely little tune on their strings. Then they cried to the flute, catch! Got it, cried the flute. My turn, tooted the trumpet. And the rest joined in. The cello. The oboe. The bassoon. While Tubby went oompa, oompa. Catch me, cried the little tune, catch me! Got you, cried Tubby. Oh, you're sitting on me, said the little tune. Poor Tubby picked up the flat little tune and tried to squeeze it back into shape. You clumsy fool, snapped the violins. I'm sorry, Mr. Fiddle, said Tubby. Fiddle, indeed! And the violins quivered with great anger. You will please address us as violins. Fiddle, indeed. Tubby, said the conductor. Tubby, what is the matter? Please, sir, I thought it would be so nice to dance with the pretty little tune instead of going umpaw, umpaw all the time. Dance, laughed the violins. Dance, well, really. The French horn quietly put his hand to his mouth and smiled. And the whole orchestra began to laugh. Stop it, cried the conductor. Stop it, I say. Tubby! Please, sir, I wasn't laughing. Rehearsal was over. Tubby was walking home with Peepo the Piccolo. Said Tubby. I just feel so bad. I don't think I want any company. I understand, said Peepo. Good night. Good night, said Tubby. The moon was out. Tubby went to the river and sat down on a log, and he looked at himself in the water. Whispered in the wind, the waterfalls tinkled, and an old hoot owl hooted. suddenly a big bullfrog hopped out of the water and sat down beside him.
Ahem! Buttercup, buttercup, lovely evening, buttercup, buttercup. I said, lovely evening, plunk, 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 plunk. I said, beautiful evening. Hello, buttercup, hello, buttercup, hello.
But Tubby just sat.
Oh, well, said the frog, oh, well, if I'm not wanted.
Oh, cried Tubby, please, Mr. Frog, come back. I didn't mean to be impolite.
Back hopped the frog.
Oh, that's all right. I'm used to it. No one pays any attention to me either.
Really? Said Tubby.
Why, of course. Every night I sit here and sing my heart out. But does anyone listen to me? No.
Can you sing? Asked Tubby.
Can I sing? Listen.
That's lovely, said Tubby.
You try it, said the frog.
Oh, thank you, said Tubby.
Say, you're a very fine tuber. Do you know it? Tubby, you should try that with your orchestra sometime.
Oh, I will, said Tubby. Goodbye, Mr. Frog.
And off went Tubby, as happy could be.
Said the frog. Most appreciative audience I've ever had. Fine musician, that tuba. Bug up, bug up, lovely evening, bug up, bug up. I said, lovely evening, clunk, 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 clunk. I said, beautiful evening. Hello, Buggup. Hello, Buggup. Good night.
The next day, the orchestra was busy tuning up for the rehearsal and buzzing with excitement over the arrival of the great new conductor, Señor Pizzicato. Tubby practiced his oompaw and smiled to himself. Peepo the Piccolo caught his eye. Feeling better? Aha, winked Tubby. Here he comes, called the French horn. Here comes Señor Pizzicato.
All right, begin.
And Tubby began to play his own little melody.
Oh, that wretched tuba snapped the violins. He'll disgrace us. The trombone stuck out his tongue. And the trumpet snickered. Tubby, said Señor Pizzicato.
Tubby, I've never heard a tuba play a melody before. Let's hear the rest of it.
Oh, said Tubby. Why, how perfectly wonderful, said the strings. Please, Tubby, may we sing your tune too? How about me, cried the xylophone. And me, said the trombone. May I, said the celeste. Here I come, cold people. And they all played.
Haven't we, Tubby? It was the bullfrog sitting right beside him. We have our points too, don't we? Oh, thought Tubby, how happy I am.
Given the opportunity, Tubby can oompa and play a melody. It just takes someone to let him do it, and a good friend. Thank you, Tubby. I love this story. It always strikes me how mean the violins are, but I guess they turn around in the end. I wouldn't depend on them staying there. Anyway, let's go on to talking about the tuba as a solo instrument. The tuba actually does have a number of great solos in orchestral literature, and I'm going to play one called Biedlo, which is from Modest Mussorgsky's Pictures at an Exhibition. Biedlo, in this composition, depicts a picture of a strong-shouldered ox pulling a cart. We first are conscious of it in the distance, the ox, via the tuba sounds, far away. It approaches, and then it fades. I have a trombone and bass trumpet player, Michael McKay from the Chicago Symphony, speaking about playing the solo in the orchestra. His colleague, Gene Picorni, performs the solo, then without the orchestra. Then we'll hear it with the Chicago Symphony, led by Carlo Maria Giolini. So here's Biedlo as a solo, plucked out of the orchestra, and then we'll throw it back into the orchestra and hear it.
Ravel's orchestration of Mussorgsky's Pictures at an Exhibition gives us the most famous tenor tuba solo in the orchestral repertoire. Biedlo is Polish for cattle. The composer describes an ox cart with enormous wheels lumbering down a muddy road. Pace the dynamics so that the ox cart starts in the distance, roars past, and fades away. Care should always be taken, especially in slow, ponderous music, despite the heaviness of the style, to drive the orchestra, not to drag.
There he goes, Beadlow, the ox, pulling a cart. That was from Pictures at an Exhibition, composed by Modest Mussorgsky. And that was the movement called Beadlow. I felt like that just happened. That's such a great piece. I'm sure tuba players like that. I'm sure Tubby would have enjoyed that. Anyway, I'm going to move on now to an interview with Chatham High School band director Mark Giordano. Now, Mark's main instrument is the trombone, but he kindly agreed to an interview about the tuba, which he teaches at Chatham High School and also plays, I must say, and plays very well, very beautifully. He showed up at my studio with a euphonium, or tenor tuba, or little tuba, as he calls it in the interview, which sounds an octave higher than its B-flat contrabass cousin. I enjoy conversations with Mark. I learn so much. It makes me want to teach more, learn more, practice more, live better, and make more music with others. You can't go wrong, and that's the sign of a great teacher. He played a few tunes. I accompanied him at the piano, and I pepper this interview with just snippets from those performances. He talks about the instrument, his student life, his life as a brass player and later teacher, and there's lots to learn from this man, so listen up. So in a marching band, how many tubas would you have?
I would have hundreds.
Would you?
My whole marching band.
And how many are there usually?
Well, depending on the situation, there's anywhere from perhaps 3 to 5 would be nice in about a 40 to 60 piece ensemble. This is a great example. All of these, the Teddy Bear's Picnic and even the Effie Suite, to see that tuba, that instrument kind of, you know, that rum, bum, 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 bum. It's almost happy in nature. It's got a little liveliness to its step, and it's still kind of, you know, it's weighty.
Trombone. I mean, that is your primary instrument. Yeah. What's the difference in producing sound for a trombone compared to tuba?
The trombone is a cylindrical bore. It's kind of like if you were to get to the end of the paper towel, the roll of paper towel. Paper towels, you have that straight cylinder, and that's the way a trombone is built. And the tuba and euphonium, which is really a love of mine, is conical, so it's constant. It's constantly growing in size. It's like a cone,
uh-huh.
And it creates a rounder sound. It's not so pointed like a trombone.
So you've mentioned instruments today that I've not heard of, the sea tuba. So can you, for my education, tell me about the instruments in the tuba family?
Well, the B-flat tuba is the primary instrument used in bands. The C tuba would be used in orchestras. And I guess there's probably a lot of soloists that play on the C, the E-flat, and the half tuba.
That's the main soloing instrument.
I think for professionals, for someone like myself who would play in a more concert band situation, I like the B-flat. It does a lot of the same, it's the same fingerings as a euphonium. It just sounds an octave lower, so I can still hear what's going on with the instrument.
And the euphonium
Is it its own category, or is that tuba family too?
I guess I would call it a little tuba. That's what I tell everybody. I play a little tuba. Oh, you mean you play a euphonium?
So, when did you start playing anything?
Well, I won't use the year. I'll try to use the grade level. I started playing trombone in fifth grade.
And why did you choose that instrument? Did a teacher force you into it, or did you just have to play that instrument?
Most teachers talk students into that instrument because there's a great need for it. But my teacher did not. I just thought it was kind of cool that you could, you know, move the slide to play notes. Everyone else had buttons.
I never understood the trombone. My brother and father played, and my brother tried to give me lessons. I had, since there wasn't a button or a key, I could not relate to how I would change notes.
It takes a while, even for the young players. I mean, they not only get a nasally kind of sound to what they're doing, but they're fishing for notes. The intonation, of course, can be perfect, but it can also be really imperfect, so to speak. And it requires just a lot of listening.
And so you're adjusting not only with the slide, but with your lips, the embouchure. Is that changing the pitch also?
That is constantly changing the pitch. For the lower notes, it's going to be more open, and then as you go up higher, it's going to be, I don't want to say closed, but it's going to be a firmer embouchure, because you can play many notes. It's the same as tuba. You can play many notes in a first position as a trombone or open position on the tuba euphonium, because you're playing all through the partials of the instrument.
But it used to really confuse me when the players would take the mouthpiece out and play tunes on the mouthpiece. So you're just affecting the pitch through the embouchure.
Correct. And the buttons are helping facilitate the instrument to do what the mind and the lips are already doing.
So you played in elementary school, trombone.
Trombone, and I played through middle and high school on trombone. And
not only in the concert band, did you get into jazz in high school?
I did. That was a lot of fun. We used to have what was called stage band. And
that was in Ravenna.
And at Ravenna, yeah. I had Malcolm McNaughton as my teacher in the high school. I had Tom Hyde in the middle school. Tom was a trombone player. And I had John Hemmingford in the elementary school. And I'm trying to think, oh yeah, I had Martin Ainspan. He was my general music teacher.
Oh, wow.
You know, music teachers are really so caring of all of their students. It kind of takes a special person to do that, or to want to do that, and to have students reach their potential. So I think there was a program of making each child feel welcome, making them feel important, which I think is critical. The overall group and the good feeling and camaraderie, I think that's what can come out of these band experiences.
But you had a great time in these bands.
I did, and then I auditioned for the Army Band, and my teacher helped me do that, and I made it at that time.
And did you audition with trombone?
I did. I did, yeah. Then I ended up going to basic training. We all went to basic training, unless you went right into a high-end military band. And then I went to the School of Music for 6 months at Norfolk.
And this was an Army training?
This was an Army, Navy, Marine School of Music. And then I shipped to Europe. And I played the beer tent circuit for 3.5 years.
So you're 18 to early 20s. Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that the military had a music school.
They do in Norfolk.
Is it still?
It still
works
there.
This way?
It's still there. Of course, the basic course that I went through is much shorter. With the economy the way it is, most of the people that are joining now are professional players anyway. So they don't really need to spend any time with them. They just need to get them acclimated to how the military does what they do. You're still always in the Army, though. You're in the service, and you can be called upon to serve in Afghanistan or Iraq or any other place in the world where there's conflict.
So you have to do military training as well?
There was military training as well when I was over in Europe. 2 weeks out of the year, we used to drive tanks, the M60 A1 tank, and we'd break track and learn how to move them from point A to B. They never gave us any ammunition because as musicians, we were pretty dangerous as it was. That was during the height of the Cold War also. So it was a very different time in Europe.
Did you know any musicians that were called out to service?
During that time, no. But the present military band that I'm in now, the 42nd Infantry Division Band, they did serve in Iraq. They were the first National Guard Army band to be put in a hostile situation.
This was the first call out.
This
Amazing.
Was the first military band that ended up going there. And they were over there for a year.
Wow. And not playing music.
Playing very little music.
I bet you met some interesting people in those bands.
I did, and some of those people have had a major influence on my life. A gentleman by the name of John Murphy, who was a trumpet player, and Patrick Jones, Dr. Patrick Jones, we were roommates, and he was another trombone player. These were two of my closest friends. They would bring me to shows. And they would show me the parts on trombone, and they would work with me. They would show me how to do some improvisation. They just always were helping. It was selfless service for these guys.
Amazing.
And constantly trying to build your confidence.
And sharing the knowledge.
Yeah.
So how did you come into teaching?
I set short-term goals for myself. And they were like 4-year goals. I was, you know, happy to graduate from high school and to audition and to become a part of the Army band program. And that took me 4 years. So my next natural 4-year progression was to go get my bachelor's degree. I did that at St. Rose. And I studied euphonium, trombone euphonium, with Dr. Mary Ann Craig. But she was a huge influence on me, my playing. Just encompassed everything that I still use today.
So your major was
trombone. And that, again, that was a 4-year goal. And then I just went on and got my master's degree. I started working at Chatham before I had even graduated St. Rose in 1989. And then I got my master's degree the following year. I studied at St. Rose. I've run into a lot of people that have offered me a lot of really valuable information and insight, and I'm extremely indebted to those folks.
And you carry on the tradition from the other people that you've mentioned from high school forward. That's great. You're just a vehicle here, Mark, passing it on. Of course, those involved in music lament the fact that the music department's programs are always on the chopping block. Maybe it's time that people who teach and people who perform as a living start advocating for music. And I've been asking people to put out their wish list for the children that they teach, for their communities, and ultimately for our country. Can I ask you what your wish list is?
You know, it's funny because we've talked a little bit about this, and my wish list is not of the material world. My real wish list is to have all the students involved, no matter what their level of ability is. Part of the wish list would be for us as educators to do some early classroom music education, so we're seeing the totality of how students learn and what sequential instruction can provide for a student. I'm a big fan of Dr. Edwin Gordon, and his music learning theories, and I would encourage everyone to, at least music educators, to go out and see what he has to offer.
That's really groundbreaking work. If anyone wanted to build a case for why music and how to teach it so everyone can be involved, that work is a great place to start.
It certainly is. He can bring students in a short period of time up to some of the, you know, the highest level of learning, which would be composition and improvisation. It gets little children doing all this kind of stuff that we never really did when I went to school, and
right.
it just wasn't available.
To know the language so well that you can actually create something with it in the moment, or sit down and think about what you'd like to write, just as we write a composition for English. Why not for music?
We should be, and we should be able to gain syntax from what is written. Like you would read the newspaper and you would have an understanding, you'd be building pictures in your mind's eyes, or a story, and you'd be creating your own film, so to speak, in your mind's eye. And as musicians, as far as when we perform, that's something that will really bring our playing. It will make it real. And that's what we really should be actually trying to have young people experience. I would also include a hefty dose of recordings, and as I said earlier, as many live musicians as you can bring in. So the budget would be to actually use money for people to actually interact with people. It wouldn't necessarily be to buy equipment or, to make an amazing rehearsal hall. I mean, these are all valuable things, but when you get down to it, it's people showing other people how to do this.
Right.
I don't know. I guess my wish list is focused all on people and how we can help each other and what we can learn from each other and how we can better society.
I think there was this idea in music education at some point where we thought, well, it should be part of the school curriculum only to make a more cultured person. The arts sort of became something to slap on to maybe raise one's position. Just know about it. Just make sure you know who the composers are. And it came to a point where it had little to do with involvement.
You're correct. It was an add-on. It wasn't a study. We're also busy with math and science and history and English, and they're also important. But I think music and art can more and better feed the soul.
Lincoln had an experience. He was talking to a gentleman who served in World War II, and he went to speak to a group of students. They were very interested in what he had to say, but they couldn't quite pin down the era of what he was talking about. And someone asked him, was that sort of like the Civil War? If you don't have any images, artistic images, the wonderful photographs of the Civil War, say from Matthew Brady, or the music, the Civil War music versus what was happening in World War II or the big band era, it seems like the arts help us grab onto what happened in the past. And the arts convey that quickly on a level that words can't. I think the reason for that was that the Civil War question was because they had only seen it in print. CIVILWAR.
A lot could be taught through music. I mean, you could look at American history. You could look at all history. I think it would be helpful to young people because they kind of hook on to music. It latches on. Everybody listens to music at some level.
Well, we've progressed far away from the tuba and the euphonium in one way, not in others.
You know, a lot of skills can be learned through music also that are lifelong skills. And we know that not everyone is going to become a musician. So what they can learn also in tuba playing and bands and orchestras and small ensembles through their education or through their educator, the individual skills necessary to actually facilitate this instrument or anything, those are going to be critical. They're lifelong. So I would encourage people to study music for, if nothing else, that reason.
Thank you, Mark. Proof is in the pudding, and you are the pudding. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Sherry.
A big thanks to Chatham High School band director Mark Giordano for this interview, talking about his life as a brass player, teacher, and lover of life and people. Indeed, learning an instrument does prepare anyone for learning any subject in life. and I'm very inspired by his musical wish list, which focuses on building community through music sharing. Maybe it takes a tuba player or a brass player to inspire us and lead the way. I'm going to end our program with a number of excerpts of various tubists and tuba compositions. One will not be like the one before. Composers and performers continue to expand the instrument sounds. And let's listen to, first off, two compositions about bees for tuba. First, I'll play a duet called Bass Bees, performed by Michael Goddard and David Bargeron. And I'll follow that with an arrangement of the Green Hornet tune performed by Nick Etheridge and his ensemble. Both incorporate a tune usually performed by a violin. We're back to the violin versus tubas again. That piece would be Flight of the Bumblebee. Be prepared for two very different pieces. First, Bass Bees, and then the theme from the Green Hornet. That was the theme from The Green Hornet. Nick Etheridge was the soloist with his band from Uncle. While researching music for this show, I found out that they love the tuba in Mexico, and accordion players really love to pair themselves with tuba players. This is the accordion Darius de la Sierra playing. Unfortunately, he does not give credit to the tuba player on his recording. Shame on you, Darius, because he plays really wonderfully here in this piece called El Individual. And I'm going to follow that immediately with the Tennessee Tech Tuba Ensemble playing Play That Funky Tuba, Right Boy. And we're going to go out with these two tunes. Thank you for joining us on this show about the tuba. I really like this show. Okay, let's go to the accordion player with his anonymous tuba player.
Ese sería mi destino, herencia de mi padre. Fierro, 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 fierro. Dale ese primo. Thank you.
Thank you.